Welcome to Marriage and Money, a conversational podcast about personal financial topics aimed at improving conversations about money in your marriage so you can reach your dreams together. This is a weekly discussion brought to you by a seemingly financially incompatible couple bonded by the legal contract of marriage. My name is David, your favorite saver, and I'm joined by the spender who always has more options for spending than investing, Heather.
First of all, who doesn't want options? Options are great. You don't want to just be told what you're doing. You want options.
You are my option lady. And if I ever need options for spending, you're the person I'm going to. So, which begs the question, why are we talking about options for investing today then? So today we have a great show planned. As I mentioned, we are talking about a few different approaches to investing that people may go.
Right. Investing is really important. I mean, we've had a lot of episodes on investing because it's really important. And everybody should be doing it. I think we talked recently on an episode how it's never too early to start. And, you know, I mean, you started when you were still in high school. And so investing is really important for everybody.
It's super important. It's something we all need to be doing. And I think it's one of those things that can be, there's so many options, and it can be very confusing. It can be very confusing because there's so many options. It can be very confusing because ways of investing can be complex.
Well, I just think the topic, a lot of people maybe aren't financially, you know, minded, and it can be a little intimidating and confusing, right? And then pile on like, oh, there's not just A, you know, there's like all these different flavors of the day for investing, and it makes it even more confusing, right?
Yes. Yeah. The number one question that I had when I first started was investing was, oh, I've got a couple extra $100 here. How can I invest it? Or what's the best quote unquote best investment for it? And it turns out there is no best investment.
Yeah.
And that's one of the struggles with investing.
I think that's the problem too, right? It's like there's lots of opinions, just like most things in life, right? Everybody's got their own opinion. And what one person thinks is the best may not be what's best for you or that you think. And so there's lots of ideas and thoughts on, like, to your point, what's the best?
Yeah, I don't know. Did you ask that question, Heather? What happened when you first started investing? Did you?
I don't think I really knew what I was doing. I just thought you just did it. I didn't really know, like, I don't think I knew, understood the complexities. I mean, honestly, the first entrance I had to investing was in my 401k. So it was like, I signed up for my 401k at work, and it was like, here are your options of mutual funds, right? Like, it was only mutual funds that I was given an option to invest in. And it was like a list of, I don't know, a dozen or something, right? And so it wasn't like,
it was simplified.
Yeah. It was like, here's what you're going to do. That was when I first started. I wasn't doing anything independently on my own or having to set stuff up, right?
So, yeah. And that's not a bad way to get started.
But even still, it was confusing because it was like, even that, which was probably the most simple way, right? It's like laid out for you. It was still like, of these 12 funds, which one do I pick? And do I put it all in one? Do I put it in all 12? Like,
that was confusing.
Yeah. So. Yes,
it is. It is. And why? Why would I pick that them? Yeah, very complex.
Right.
But I think no matter what, I think we can all agree investing is an important thing to do. We know that long term, all of us have goals of some kind, whether that be to sit on the couch all day and not work, or if that's to go on a great vacation, if that's to fund your kids' college, if that's to buy a new car, if it's to buy your first house or upgrade your home. We all have goals, and we need investing there in order to help us reach those goals.
Right. I mean, to your point, the simplified reason why we invest, right, is to grow your money to reach your goals, to your point. That can look very different. How you invest, it can look very different what your goals are, but at the end of the day, that's really the reason why.
Yes, yes. And so this is an important topic for couples to talk through. One, because you might have different goals than your spouse. And so, again, we harp on this all the time, but make sure you get your goals with your spouse aligned. And that needs to happen before you start to have these investing conversations so that you know how is it that we want to get into our investing. Start with your goals and work from there, as we always say. And And you might, you're also going to want to talk to your spouse about different investment options, because you're probably going to differ somewhat on the amount of risk you want to take on. And you might be very risk adverse and your spouse may be very risk focused and high return focused. But it's important to understand where you each are coming from as you're navigating these.
Yeah. So we're going to walk through some investment options today to try to hopefully clear some, if you've got some confusion or were wondering, oh, I didn't know there were options. I thought it was just mutual funds. We wanted to walk through it. But I think you bring up a good point. There's really two things that we're mainly going to cover, right? Is like understanding when you're, so if you're growing your money for your goals, you need to understand your timeline. Is this a goal that's going to happen in 6 months to a year? Is this a goal that's going to happen in 20 years, right? And then, so the timeline, and then, like you said, David, the risk tolerance, right?
Exactly.
You guys may see, not see eye to eye, but understanding what's your appetite for risk. And that can change, right? That's the beauty of this stuff.
It will change. Yeah. I would say it will change. And it'll change as you mature in your, and grow your portfolio, things will certainly vary. So the first item we want to touch on are high yield savings accounts. So Heather, what's a high yield savings account?
Well, a high yield savings account is basically what it says. Like, it's a savings account so that you get at just a standard bank, right? That has a higher interest rate than maybe just a general
than a basic savings account.
Right. I mean, and honestly, it's not like there's a huge range there. Savings accounts are pretty competitive. It's like, here's what you get. But trying to find, you know, a bank that gives you the best rate of return.
Usually these banks that have higher interest rate savings accounts are the online banks that don't have physical buildings. They don't have overhead. They don't have tellers. They don't have, there aren't people. There isn't the convenience of having a local place nearby. And but then they're able to give you maybe a 0.25% more interest rate. But this, while this is, we're technically classifying this as an investment option, I wouldn't say that it's really much of an investment, because these are not keeping up with inflation. This is this is a place to store money. This might be where you have your emergency fund sitting, but you need to be aware that you're probably, technically with inflation, you're probably losing money in this account.
Right. Yeah, you're right. This isn't really an investment option, but it's better than just keeping your money in your house or in a safe or something, right?
Yeah, you're going to make something.
Yeah, and I think here, like, this is, like, very low. I would almost say no risk here, because if you're under the $250,000 FDIC insured limit, like, you're not going to lose this money. But to your point, it's not even to keep up with inflation. So if you keep it there too long or whatever, it is going to just devalue.
It's going backwards.
Right,
So, yeah, it takes...
But it's, again, better than just keeping it under the mattress.
It takes the edge off of inflation, but you're not keeping up with inflation on this. So for most people, the only thing we would recommend a savings account or a high yield savings account for would be your emergency fund, where you need cash at the ready at a moment's notice. If you need to get cash today, this is how you could get cash today, by having it in this account.
So the next option, which isn't much different, is a CD, or certificate of deposit. So, David, do you want to talk through that one?
Sure. I'd love to. I know all about those compact discs or certificates of deposit. I can't remember.
No, we're in MP3s now, right? No, wait. Are we on MP3 files? Or
yeah,
are we on...
I don't know. I don't know. Wait. 8-track? Are we still on 8-track? Anyway, no. We're streaming mostly in this household. But no, so CDs, certificates of deposit, they're similar to, in, I would say they're somewhat similar to high yield savings accounts, in that the interest rates are generally pretty low. But they're probably going to match, or maybe even a little bit better, do a little bit better than inflation. And so that's a good thing. So if you need money you need to stash away and you want zero risk, then I guess it's a place for it. But really, again, I really wouldn't recommend most people use CDs, because you're locking in your money. These CDs are set for certain terms. So you might be locking your money away in a CD for a year or 3 years or 5 years. And you're going to be penalized if you take that money out too early. If you take it out early, you're going to get a fee for that.
Right. But by locking it in, that's how the bank can give you a higher interest rate than just like your normal savings account. So it's a little bit better, but probably not tons better. Right? This is actually backing up. This is actually the first, if we're calling this investment, this was actually the first investment I did. I remember as a kid when I had saved up enough of my babysitting money, and my birthday money, and my dad was like, whoa, you've got that much money? We need to go to the bank. And we went to the bank and we opened a CD for me. And I think at that time, I think it was a 5-year CD. And I remember thinking, or maybe it was 3-year. Either way, I remember thinking, oh my goodness, like I can't touch this money for like that long. Like, wow.
Yes. And technically this was the first thing I did as well, is I think I did a 5-year CD. I had $500.
I think that's how much mine was too.
Working a part-time job or something, it was probably mowing lawns. It was before I had a proper job. And so we went to the bank and got a 5-year CD and like, okay, this is going to be ready in time for me to go to college.
Right.
And so that 500 became, I don't know, 600 or something, right?
Right.
700. It wasn't huge, but over 5 years, and it was kind of crazy to think, wow, this $500 is now gone for 5 years.
I know, right? As a kid, it was scary. And I remember, I think I cashed mine out after college, and I was like, wait, that's all?
That's it? Yeah, that's kind of depressing. Yeah, it is. It is. And so, yeah, again, I wouldn't recommend personally CDs because you're locking your money away for a long time and you don't have a great return on it. Right. So there's not a lot of incentive there in my mind.
Right.
So
the next one that we wanted to cover were bonds. And bonds are includes you can get corporate bonds or government bonds. But basically what a bond is either a corporation or a government has gone out to the market and needed cash. And so they took a loan out, and a bunch of investment firms, you know, gave them the cash, but they took on investors who were willing to be that, I guess, loan, the person loaning the money, the borrower, yeah, to these government or
lender,
corporate.
Sorry, the lender.
Yeah, sorry, the lender to these corporations or governments. And so you can buy into that. And obviously those corporations and governments are paying an interest rate to get that money. So then you get that return. So, again, it's a pretty safe investment because, you know, especially I would say on governments, because most governments aren't going to ever go broke. They can just raise taxes or whatever.
Or print money and
right.
deflate or inflate so, the money.
Yeah. Yeah, so the odds of them not paying you back is pretty low. Same thing with corporations. Most corporations that go into the market are pretty solid corporations, but it is a little bit more riskier than just putting it in a bank with a guaranteed interest rate, right?
But I
would say the risk here is still pretty low.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so bonds you would typically buy through a brokerage firm. So if you have a brokerage account, you would buy this in a similar way that you would buy a stock or a mutual fund or something along those lines. And you're right, low risk, but it can vary. So there are corporations that are not doing very well that might be near death, right?
Yeah, I mean, have you heard of Enron or WorldCom?
Yeah, so if a corporation is near collapse and they're taking out debt in order to try one last ditch effort to stay afloat, you might get a great rate on that bond, great return, but there's also a good chance that company could go belly up and default on that bond and then you won't get anything. So yeah, as long as you're aware of what the risk is on that bond, and bonds are rated, have different bond ratings to tell you how risky is it. So
yeah,
you're going
in
with your eyes open.
I think this is a common investment that you'll see a lot as an option from, you know, financial advisors or companies even on your investments. And is often, again, a way to de-risk your portfolio. Especially as you age and you need to use it, right? You need to use that money.
Yep, it's predictable. You know when you're going to get paid from it. Next would be mutual funds. And I would say this is where we've done the most of our investing, Heather, is in the mutual fund area.
I would mutually agree with that.
Oh. and also,
you can put the laugh track there.
I'd also lump in index funds into this because index funds are also a collection of stocks that make up a particular market, whether that be the S&P 500 or Dow Jones Industrial Average or NASDAQ, that make up these different markets. And so the great thing about mutual funds is that they are flexible. So unlike a CD where you're locked in, you can buy and sell mutual funds as much as you want, but overall, they're recommended for long-term investing because just like the rest of the market, you're going to have ups and downs in the market, and you want to ride out those downs so that over time, you come out ahead. You have a gain on that.
Yeah, exactly. So these, like the return, the growth potential is pretty high because it's going to follow if you do a standard fund that follows the S&P 500, right? It's going to follow the average stock market, which over, you know, its lifetime has been, I don't know, what, 8%? I mean, it's been a pretty good, decent solid, rate of return, right? And so to David's point, there are years where it's negative. Like right now, you've lost money on your investments. But
we've lost money this year for sure.
Right. But the last couple of years, we had like incredible gains, right? And so the point of this is it is a long-term investment to have it go out there and hopefully recover and earn. But so this isn't something you want to cash out. I mean, you can cash it out whenever, and eventually you will, but this is more of a longer term.
Right.
And I would say this is kind of a medium risk, right? Because
It can go down. It will go down.
Right.
It will go down. Right. And the key is to not sell when it goes down. So
right.
there's a 0% chance it's only going to go up because,
right.
So you need to be able to weather that storm, but that's okay because you know, it's always, given the history of the market, given the history of all these funds, they always go back up over time.
Right.
If you're in a respectable fund.
Right. And I think our financial advisor always say the markets go down then up, not up and down. Right.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But I think what's beautiful about this investment is it really is kind of a fits for everybody, right? Like whether you're, no matter where you are in life, your age, your how much money, I mean, there's minimums you have to invest, but not, I mean, that bar is pretty low. Like
it is.
This is a great vehicle for pretty much anybody to get a pretty decent return.
It is. Yes. And you don't need to, what I love about mutual funds is that you don't need to watch them every day. Like
you don't want to.
You have fund managers that are putting stocks in and out of them and making sure that fund is a good representation of what's going to do well in that particular area that you're investing in. And there's a lot to be said about that, especially if you aren't a financial whiz.
Right. So speaking of stocks, let's segue to our next investment vehicle.
Ooh, what could it be?
Which would be individual stocks.
Oh, surprise.
So now we're going to start getting into the risky, sexy stuff here. Calm down, David. Don't start sweating. So stocks are obviously buying into a company that's publicly traded on an exchange. So like Amazon or Google, you know, or there's even smaller companies, but these companies are out there. Anybody can buy a piece of ownership in them and hopefully you get some sort of return. That stock price will either go up or they pay out a dividend. So some people buy stocks that are dividends, with the whole point of not necessarily needing a huge share appreciation, but nice, liking the nice like quarterly return, like knowing, hey, I'm going to get paid $1.50 every quarter on every share of stock or whatever, and just get a continual revenue stream, right?
So yeah,
a
lot it's
of
passive people do income, that. Essentially.
Right.
Just cash coming in, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and it's great. So there is some advantage to doing those stocks. What I struggle with stocks personally, it's high risk, high reward. But what I struggle with is that in order to get that high reward, generally you have to be very educated on the stocks you're investing in. And it's not just educated today, it's educated today, educated tomorrow, educated the day after that. You got to watch them very closely.
Right.
And you're managing your ownership of those stocks. You're not just buying them.
Right.
And that's where I struggle a little bit is that something I want to be doing on a regular basis?
Right. I mean, you hear those stories of those people that, oh, I bought Apple stock when it was $1.50 and
yes.
got it in the ground. And you're like, wow. And now you're worth hundreds of millions
yes.
and doing great. But the likelihood, to your point, of knowing what company or what stock is going to do that, I mean, that's kind of the anomaly, not the norm. That's the exception.
It's
right?
easy to identify those stocks looking back. It's
right.
really hard to identify what is that stock today? So what's that stock? What's that Tesla stock today that's going to jump up, you know, 300% in a year, right? Like, okay, if you know that stock, by all means, this is for you. But odds are you don't. Or if you think you do, you probably don't.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are, like we said, there are more stable stocks, like your company that's been around for 150 years.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, has been pretty solid. But that's more of a dividend stock.
That's
right?
A dividend stock. And so
it's appreciated, but it's more about, hey, it's paying out this regular dividend.
Yep. Yep. There are those blue chips. They call them blue chip stocks that have been around for a long time. And they're always just slow and steady. They might not gain a lot, but you probably have a little bit of dividend income coming off of them. They're stable. You're not going to lose your shirt. They're kind of safe stocks to have. But if you have those, you're not really, yeah, it's a different type of investment strategy, right? It all depends on how much risk you're up for. Next, I think we should touch on other alternative investments.
Ooh, like the band, like alternative music, like live or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Group. Did I just date myself?
Like some 90s alt rock. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, no, I'm talking about things like commodities, like gold and silver, or, you know, cryptocurrencies are certainly big right now. Collectibles are big. We had a kind of an odd investment, I think, episode a while back where we talked about a few of these, but these are generally used to hedge people's bets against the stock market. So if you think the normal regular market is going to tank, then these are the kinds of things that'll hold their value when stocks are plummeting or when inflation might be going crazy. Things like this could hold their value, but they're also really risky because, again, like, do you know that with gold, do you know that they're not going to mine a whole bunch more gold next year and the supply is going to be flooded and now your gold's not worth as much? Or do you know that your Bitcoin is going to be accepted everywhere next year, or people are still going to be excited about it next year as they are this year? Maybe, maybe not.
Right. I think that this one's really tricky because you just don't know, right? Like cryptocurrencies, like that didn't even exist. What, like 15 years ago,
yeah.
Right? And now, and that thing has just bounced around. So it's like, you're really taking a gamble. Now it could work out really well for you, but it is a big risk. So, you know, you might have some fun play money that you can play around. Or if you have an interest, like, oh, I love stamps so much and I'm going to go hunt and find them and keep them and hope that they go up in value. But who knows, you know, whether it's going to still be worth, I don't even know what a stamp goes for these days. A dollar?
I don't know. We don't send out very many letters.
But you know what I'm saying? So it is really risky. It could work out well or you could lose everything, right? So this is definitely not something you want to put all your money into, but could be a little something fun, interest on the side. And this is definitely something that's probably more long-term, right?
Yes, yes.
And, you know.
And like you said, no matter what, this is not your primary investment strategy, or it should not be your primary investment strategy.
Right.
You should be focused elsewhere rather than here.
Right. So the last investment we wanted to talk about was real estate.
Ooh, and that's probably the most common of the non-traditional investments. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or non-financial
tools.
Tools, yeah. Right. So obviously real estate could be house, it could be commercial, anything like that. It could be your home, it could be
rental properties.
Yeah. So it's basically,
it could be empty land, farmland.
Yes, exactly. So anything like that obviously is real estate. So this one definitely is a long-term investment. And, well, I mean, I guess people have flipped houses and stuff, but it's probably more of a longer term. The thing
typically
with it is it's not flexible or liquid. Like the real estate market isn't something you can just daily trade. Like, oh, I want to sell this today and sell it. Like odds are it's going to take time for you to liquidate that asset and get your money out when and if that time comes when you want to do that.
And you don't know exactly how much it is. You think you know how much your real estate's worth.
Right.
But you don't know how much it's worth until you sign on the dotted line and get a check.
Right. And this was always like the tricky thing when I was an auditor, like getting the valuation, because it's like, it's worth what people are willing to pay. But until you put it up for sale and see what the market says, to your point, you don't know what that's going to be worth.
You don't know. No, but I would say generally over time, real estate holds its value.
Right. Or increases.
Or increases usually. Now, we've never made money selling a house.
So don't take real estate investment advice from us,
but,
guys.
Yeah, so we don't have any real estate that we use as investments, because that has not worked out for us in the past. So we're probably not the best people to talk to about real estate, but
we should have somebody on to talk about it.
We do. We know a couple people that do have real estate investments, and it has worked out well for them.
Or if you're one of those people, give us a call or write in.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, we'd love to have you on, because that's one area we haven't talked a lot about on here, but we know that there's a lot of potential here. A lot of people do it.
Yeah, a lot of people have made a lot of money on this. Yes. And have done really well. It is a great vehicle. I mean, you can get, you know, a return if you're renting it out and you're getting rent for more than what your debt or your expenses are on it. And then also the value of it.
Yeah.
You know, you have the value in it.
It never goes to zero.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
that's one positive about it. So no matter what, you're going to have something left over at the end. So
right.
It's pretty secure.
Right.
Yeah. So, Heather, we've talked about a lot of different options, and we've talked about different risk profiles and short-term, long-term, but how do you decide what is right for you specifically? Or as a couple's having these discussions saying, okay, we've got some extra money. Do we buy a rental house, or do we buy a mutual fund,
right,
a bunch of mutual funds? How do you make that decision for yourself?
Right. And that's what you're not going to hear from us to hear today. Say, here's exactly what you should do, what your portfolio should look like,
right,
because it's going to be different for everyone. So a couple of things that you should think through when you and your spouse are thinking about what should our portfolio look like is, A, like we said, your timeline. So is it, hey, I need this money in 6 months, or I need this money in 20 years, because that's going to determine what investment you put it in. B, your risk tolerance. Are you like, hey, let's do something risky and put it in crypto? Or are you like, hey, I'm a little bit nervous, this investing thing is new, let's just go with some bonds to get some return, but probably not going to make a ton, right?
Yeah.
So understand your risk tolerance. And like we said, that can change. So you can change it. Just because you go into the market and you put your investments in doesn't mean that you shouldn't be regularly looking at that and adjusting it as you go. And then also, obviously, how much money you have to invest. Like, how much do you have will help determine what you're going to buy. If you only have $500, you're probably not going to be able to buy a house or an apartment building as an investment, right? You're probably going to need to do a bond or a mutual fund or something, or a stock.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I would think about is, how much help do you need, right? So if you're someone who's like super savvy and knows how to go online and do all this stuff and figure it out, then you can probably have more options. But if you're someone who's going to need some more help or need some guidance, like your options may be a little bit more limited, right?
They might be more limited, but that doesn't mean you can't jump into this.
Right,
it's not
exactly
an excuse to say, oh, I can't figure it out. No, you can get a little help to get started. And you probably, like something like a mutual fund, you probably don't need to touch it. If you get help setting that up, you can just set it up to automatically deposit in there, and then you're set. So there are easy ways to do this as well.
Yeah. The important part is you should start investing and get on the same page with you and yourselves to do it.
Right. Right. And we hope that a better understanding of what these different strategies, what these different tools are for investing, helps you have that, start that conversation to say, oh yeah, we heard about this, the mutual funds, or we heard about, doing individual stocks or real estate or bonds. And now that we have a little bit of understanding on this, let's dive in deeper. Let's go do some Google searches and figure out what do we actually need to do to get started on this.
That's right. So we want you to continue this conversation with your spouse or significant other. So we want you to discuss your investment strategy and your portfolio. So we feel like the best place to start is start by asking each other about your risk tolerance and how you're feeling about how risky you want to get with investing. So David.
Heather.
Our investment strategy, as we've kind of alluded in this episode, has been pretty safe and conservative, pretty traditional. It's been in savings accounts, mutual funds. We've had a few individual stocks. Why do you think we have stayed kind of the normal course and not invested in some of these other strategies like alternative investments, or like you mentioned, we haven't really done real estate?
Yeah, I think the reason, at least for me, the reason that I haven't been pushing to go that direction is because I am not an investment whiz. And I think I've proven that time and again. Like I've had some stocks, individual stocks in the past, before we were married, and I didn't watch them close. And didn't do well with them as a result of that, because I wasn't watching them. I wasn't keeping up on the companies. It wasn't a good idea. And then I'm not really good at guessing winners and losers, obviously. And a great example I know that I've brought up before was my venture into Bitcoin, you know, 10 years ago. And I was like, this is fun, but it's not going to pick up. And had I stayed with that, we'd be a lot better off financially than we are today. But, you know, I think it's a good reminder that I'm not a very good judge of what's going to be uber successful and what isn't. And so as such, I'm better off with a overall strategy of the tortoise, you know, from the tortoise and the hare, of slow and steady is going to win this race. Let's just keep plugging money into mutual funds that I don't have to watch. And I'm going to be able to sleep better at night. It's not going to stress me out. That's just better for me. I think it's better for our marriage that way. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Heather?
I was thinking the exact same thing. I think it's really two things. You covered both of them. One is risk tolerance. So your risk tolerance and mine isn't super, and probably for all those reasons, because we don't know, we haven't had good luck. And so our risk tolerance, I remember we did think about getting into real estate at one point.
We did.
In our first house, the house next door came up for sale super cheap. And we thought, oh my gosh, we could buy it. We could, you know, remodel it and flip it and make some money. And we were super excited about it. But what we realized is we don't know anything about that. Like, yes, we can watch HGTV and we could figure it out. But like, we both had full-time jobs. It wasn't something that we were gonna super interested in, like learning and putting the effort in. And so we were just like, maybe that's just not for us. Right. Not that it isn't for other people. And that goes to my next point, is to your point, like, we aren't financial experts, right? We're not super passionate. We're not reading tons of blogs, listening to podcasts on investment strategies and digging in and doing all this research. It's like, neither of us have that passion or desire to do it. And so, like, we've kind of, to your point, just been like, well, since we don't know, we're not knowledgeable, let's just stay the course and, you know, try to do what the average person can get for a return.
That's right. Yeah. So we might not be financial wizards to that degree. We are passionate about finances and marriage, and that's why we have this podcast.
Right.
We're passionate about finances and marriage. We're passionate about making marriages work and not letting marriages fall apart because of money issues.
Right.
And I think what we're hoping this podcast is helping you with is understanding that, you know what, you don't have to be a financial wizard to be successful in your finances and to be successful in your marriage. And some basic knowledge is going to get you 95% of the way to where you need to be.
Right. And to not be fighting over money, and, right?
Which is
be
the
successful
thing.
And not break up your marriage over.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh. Well, thank you. That was a great answer, Heather. I really appreciate you doing that.
I got an A on that one.
I'll give you an A.
Oh, sweet.
Maybe even an A plus.
Woo!
I'll have to grade you on the curve. We'll see where the other students come in. But I think that about wraps up our conversation for today. Remember, you can always email us at marriageandmoneypodcast@gmail.com or message us on Instagram at marriage.and.money. Thanks again for joining us this week. And remember that whether you're a spender or a saver, your best financial life lies somewhere in the